Hello, everybody, and welcome. We had a situation where the Maestro code didn't let anybody in until just a minute ago. You may have had to redial a few times. Sorry about that, but welcome, and I'm happy to be here with everyone today. This is Terry Patton, and this call is an opportunity to find out more about the intimate small group work that I do with dedicated people in an ongoing way. It's one of the most rewarding things that I do in all my work. It's so powerful to work overtime in a deep and personal way with people and to watch actual life transformation take place and real awakening. So I wanted to take a little time to talk about what that is and what the context for that is in my work with people. As I begin, though, I want to not focus just on the small groups themselves only, but the context of all this. Because we're living in a moment culturally in which so much is happening so quickly that it's very, very hard to see the forest for the trees. And it's very hard to see even what it is that I'm focusing on in my teaching work clearly, because it can blur together with so many other dimensions of good work that people are doing spiritually and psychologically and even politically or socially or philosophically. So let me take a moment to offer a little bit of context there. I think most everybody on this call probably has some feeling for a number of huge contextualizing pieces here that I'd like to go into. One of them being the profound and paradoxical relationship of awakening and life. The fact that at a deep level, what we truly are is consciousness itself. We are at the deepest, deepest level of our own identity, something universal. We are the space in which experience arises. We are that which is the witness, which is the observer of everything that arises. But that is always paired, that free consciousness is always in a dynamic pairing with arising, changing phenomena, many of which are all focused around me and my plans and what's going to happen tomorrow and people in my life and all the rest, right? It's this dynamic of time and personality self that are always tending to be the gravitational holders of the thought stream and the experience stream. And we have important teachings of awakening that really help us notice the difference and wake up. And there's a tremendous stress on awakening from mere identification with experience. And yet, those teachings tend to draw us into a transcendental relationship to our experience. And we often will have an intuitive feeling, well, wait, yes, it's true. I want to wake up from being always bound to that identified self-position, but I don't want to just distance from experience. I don't want to wake up from identification into some abstracted spiritual bypass. And so we have a lot of teachings that are aware of this and that draw us into living our life more fully. But very often, we find ourselves not awakening as fully from that identification in those in engagement with those teachings. Those teachings tend to be about how to live life better. Well, the stream of teaching that I'm offering is profound and in some ways rare because it really emphasizes both sides of that paradox. And this is something that I get into more in my more detailed teachings. But right now, what I want to say is our freedom, our awakeness, which is the very essence of enjoyment and love and bliss and creativity and everything good, really, is always appearing in as a dynamic pair with the arising, changing moment of experience. And therefore, real awakening is both awakening from identification with that limited so-called ego or subject-object point of view, and awakening into contact with its essence, its expression in the moment. So taking life seriously at the same time that we awaken from taking life seriously is the essence of real awakening. This is a profound paradox, and it's something that's infinitely, infinitely rich and infinitely deep. And it's a source of real freedom, real humor in relation to life, but also passionate commitment to life. And it's that point of view that I'm teaching out of, and that paradox, the depth of an understanding of that paradox that I'm bringing to the teachings that I offer, is how can I put this? There are many teachings that acknowledge this abstractly, but what it is to embody this in a real way draws us into a tremendous amount of tenderness and self-compassion and awe and contact with our humanity at the same time that they open us up to tremendous freedom in relation to experience. And the fullness of both that tenderness and that profound level of feeling and self-compassion and compassion for others and connection to life and humanity. And at the same time, the force of commitment to that which is truly free and good and true and beautiful and awake and able to make real free choices, that at the same time, this is rarely fully embodied. It's my belief that we're at a moment in which there's a profound and rapid evolution of consciousness and culture, which is taking us to a place of radically new opportunity. We are the ones in a moment in the evolution of human culture who are around for what is actually an unprecedentedly profound evolutionary drama. My friend Jean Houston often likes to say, in every age, everybody felt that they were living in a time which was the crucial time, when everything was at stake, when everything mattered. Well, they were wrong. This is the time. She's kind of, there's a humor in that, because obviously some future moment might be even more potently important. But what happens in our lifetimes matters tremendously. We really are the luckiest people who have ever lived. In many ways, we have access to food and comfort and a tremendous amount of information and mobility. All the wisdom traditions that humanity has ever generated in the history of the species from every tradition are in conversation with one another. Not only that, the actual schools of development of all those traditions are in conversation in the living experience of individuals in a way that has really never happened before. And here we are, beneficiaries of all that, and also we're alive in a time in which there's a mass extinction of thousands of species going on right now, in which our atmosphere has been altered chemically and our weather patterns have been disrupted, in which most human institutions are in crisis, whether we think of political or economic or educational institutions, our healthcare institutions. And not just in the United States or in the European countries where most of us come from, or Australia, New Zealand, but really in every country in the world, we're in a crisis moment. And so we're so privileged, and we're given these opportunities, and we are waking up. There is such rapid evolution of consciousness and culture, rapid evolution of spiritual culture right here and right now in this time. And yet we have to wake up in this time. We are under a kind of pressure. It is as though from the beginning this mysterious arising that is our universe, this miracle that was the Big Bang, I like to call it, instead of the Big Bang, which kind of objectifies it and deadens it, you know, it's such a miracle. This is the moment in which there was suddenly something instead of nothing. I like to call it the holy yes rather than the Big Bang, the holy yes, which was the great radiance out of which everything has manifested itself, which in some sense is who we are. That miracle has been hurtling toward more complexity, more consciousness, more interconnectivity, more articulation, more aliveness, and it's been moving toward those things faster and faster and faster as it's evolved from just physical evolution before life and then through biological evolution faster and faster and now through cultural evolution, which is moving so fast that we're really the first generations who are watching evolution unfold before us and participating consciously in the evolution of consciousness and culture. And we are doing that at a time when what we do matters at the scale even of biological evolution. That is, the future of all the species on the planet to some degree depends on what happens with human beings and human cultural evolution. And to the degree that a greater consciousness and care can be brought forward in the form of human life, how will that happen? It will only happen through conscious people participating in life in some way that has more authenticity and immediacy, more awareness, more presence, more care, more integrity, more freedom, more creativity than we ever have had before. So here we are, we're the inheritors of all this opportunity, and we're also, though, often alarmed, you know. We're often feeling the stress of those crises and the ways in which it impinges upon us. We are both, in some sense, we have it so good, and in another sense, we're under enormous stress. We're living in a world that has evolved to present us with absurdly intense, supernormal stimuli that grab our attention and just almost manipulate us and keep us hypnotized and to some degrees grab us in a way that stimulates, gets our blood running, you know, whether we're talking about delicious food or images of the lifestyles of the rich and famous or sexually suggestive images or images of romantic emotional fulfillment or the exaggerated images even of cuteness that get our oxytocin going. Every one of our pieces of our hardwired anatomy are triggered by things that have evolved to be supersized dollops of stimulation, and we're being jerked this way and that, but we're also being numbed by it, you know, by the intensity of that all the time. So it's an inspiring time to be alive, but it's a hard time too. And a level of depth of contact with our own experience and a kind of empathy and compassion for ourselves and for others is absolutely necessary for us to participate authentically. See, one of the things that is really at the core of how I work is an attempt to bring us much more fully, much more profoundly and humanly into contact with one another. Because we're social creatures, and in our common society, there is relatively little ground, little reinforcement for our greatest depth. It is as though when we connect with other people, we subtly communicate and reinforce an attitude toward life that really is quite alienating and false. It's as though this life is about fulfillment. This life is one in which being a little emotionally deadened is normal. It's as if being in deep contact with one another is not something we ought to really expect. It's as if everybody should act as though a kind of flattened egoic subject-object consciousness that's not very deeply happy and not very fully alive is normal, and we shouldn't expect any more from life. That real intimacy with one another is hardly even possible and almost taboo or impolite to strive for. The existential alienation that is the dominant paradigm out of which most people are living their lives is tending to come back at us and tend to persuade us that it tends to dissuade what's best in us from our richest and most profound aspirations. So when I teach integral spiritual practice, I'm not just teaching a set of principles for how to do a practice every day. I'm communicating something about an existential ground from which I keep intending to live, in which I keep finding my way into deeper and more profound contact with other people, out of which I think something genuine and profound and truly intimate and inspiring and catalytic and authentically supportive of what's best in me and in others can generate. And that is the essence of what I feel like I have embodied in a pretty rich way in this course, this 8-session course, Integral Spiritual Practice, that I think some of you have taken. So actually, I'd like to get a feeling for who has called in. If you have taken that 8-session course, would you please press 1 on your telephone keypad? And if you have not taken the course, would you please press 2 on your telephone keypad so I can get a feeling for who has and who hasn't taken the course? So I see that, yeah, many of you are pressing. Please press 1 if you have taken the course and 2 if you have not taken the course. Almost everybody has done so now. Okay, thank you. Okay, I see that most of you have not taken the course yet. So I'm going to be inviting people into 2 kinds of mutuality groups. One of them will go through the course with me in an in-depth and detailed way. And the other will be for people who have already taken the course I'm hoping to form 2 groups or maybe even 3. And those of you who haven't done the course yet would do the course with me. Those of you who are already familiar with the course, if you've really done the course in depth and you don't choose to go through it again, that can be fruitful. I will simply engage with you at the level of what's emerging right now in my process. Now, some of that will find its way into the way I take people through the course as well. Okay. Well, let me say a little bit more about this course and what I think it can be. The course is very rich. If I were to criticize, I would say the worst thing about it is that it gives you more than you can digest in a short period of time. And that process of really digesting and integrating what's offered in that 8-session course is what I want to lead you through in this circle of mutuality with this level of personal guidance. You see, there are many of us on this call who, and actually, in fact, let me ask you to press your keypads again and tell me about this question too. I know that some of you are relatively new to spiritual practice and others are long-term veterans. So let's say if you have, let's do 1, 2, and 3. If you have been a spiritual practitioner, a serious spiritual practitioner for 10 years or more, and you've done a regular practice for a long time, please press 1. And if you've discovered your spiritual path and engaged it for a while, but not quite so long, say between 2 and 10 years, please press 2. And if you've just recently gone through a big opening and you've discovered and really engaged your spirituality and your personal growth in a much more profound way just lately, and it's been the last couple of years or less, please press 3. So it just helps me get a feeling for who we're talking with. So if it's 10 years or more, press 1. If it's 2 to 10 years, press 2. If it's less than 2 years, or 2 years, up to 2 years, please press 3. Not all of you have pressed your keypads. Yeah, thank you. Okay. Well, most of us are pretty experienced. It's a nice spread across the spectrum, but we're people who've been at this for a while. Well, me too. I've been at it for 40 years. And the course that I teach it's created and geared so that it addresses the needs of the really serious and experienced person, but is also usable by the person who's really beginning to, say, meditate for the very first time with taking the course. So let me say a little something about how the course organizes itself. First of all, this is the most important teachings are the most basic ones. The principles that awaken us to the path are the principles that awaken us on the path, and they are the principles that awaken us in the fruition of the path. So the core matter of this paradoxical relationship of love and freedom, of awake intelligence and devotional joy, and intimacy with God, and transcendence of ego, all being identical. This is woven through the warp and woof of all this. And the paradox of awakening to freedom and then awakening into life and into a more full and vulnerable and passionate and alive relationship to living experience, that's woven right through every bit of what I teach. And the awareness of our, the paradox that we're just one person and I'm only able to be responsible for this one life. And I'm only one of 7 billion people on this teeming planet. And the grandiosity of imagining myself to be in charge of evolution or able to take responsibility and have power over this whole large pattern of things. That humility is the ground of my sanity. And at the same time, if there is no responsibility for that larger pattern, if there is no aspiration to make a larger difference, my life becomes paradoxically more trivial. How is it that I can be both humble and daring in a way that is psychologically healthy and deeply related? And how can I do that in relation to others in a way that is authentic and that builds a level of contact with one another and a level of connection with one another that strengthens us and deepens us and enables us to awaken more and more fully. Well, the way I do that in the course is something I can very briefly summarize here. I have a mnemonic device of five words that begin with M that give us the core of how practice proceeds. It's mornings, moments, mission, milestones, and momentum. By mornings, I mean a daily practice. Usually people do it in the morning, but it doesn't have to be at any particular time of the day. Like every morning, this morning, you know, I woke up and I engaged in a whole process of conscious movement and breathing that brought me alive and brought me whole bodily into contact with the mystery of existence and just with the connectedness of my embodiment and my heart and my gut and the radiance of my consciousness. Out of that, I was able to sit in meditation for half an hour, in which I really reinforced and reawakened my intuitive freedom from experience. That was my morning's practice today. Moment's practice is how that awakening weaves its way into the warp and woof of the lived life, of every moment of life. So in every moment, in any moment, we have choices. We have choices about where we put our attention and how we put our attention. And our ability to be present and awake and to make good choices about where we put our attention and the attitude and feeling energy with which we direct our attention. This is a practice we can do in any moment. So there are many particular moments practices at the point where you have awakened to radical consciousness. You can be awakening to radical consciousness for a brief moment many times a day, and this is how that awakening will find its way into the flow of your daily life. But just dropping into the body, to being integrated like a centaur, an embodied consciousness, mind-body division being broken down so that there's whole body feeling attention. That's a moment's practice, too. Or connecting to the heart, traveling that all-important foot and a half from head to heart so that the consciousness we bring is heart-based and awake. That's a moment's practice. And there are many. I teach probably a dozen different moments practices in the course of the 8-week course, and they are by no means the limit of it. So that's key, practicing in every moment of the day and having a sense of the possibility that all of life can be practiced, that all of life is a yoga, that we are alive in an inquiry in which how we are being is always up for revision. The project of how we are making meaning, how we are relating to experience is an unfinished project that is always evolving, and that we are alive in that inquiry and that we're invigorated by the possibility of something new coming into being. That's the core of what animates this moment's practice. Mission is a very important thing. It has to do with understanding how our deep yearning, how our unique expression connects with the world's need, how who it is that you uniquely are has a unique gift to give and is connected compassionately with real contact with with others, so that you kind of know something about how to give your greatest gift. And that can function as a sort of a compass, a true north, that can help you make your choices about what to give your energy to and how to make key decisions in life. And it's something that we go into in one of the sessions of the course. But that expresses itself in life in particular projects, in particular things that we do, whether it's getting a degree or writing a book or buying a house or planting a garden or taking a course or creating an artwork or raising a child or finding a relationship or consecrating that relationship. You know, there are so many different milestones, practices, but what makes any of those projects a true practice is three things. One, you do it in service to something greater than yourself with a real sense of self-transcending motivation. Two, you do it with a sense of partnership, with grace, with a greater all-accomplishing power. Not just your 20 wants, but you doing what you can do, taking 100% responsibility and then opening for another brighter transcendent energy to flow through you into the project. And then three, that you do it with the knowledge that if you really give yourself to this wholeheartedly, it'll transform you. That the person who completes that degree or the person who completes that book or that website or whatever it is that's your project will be a little different than the one who began it, that you'll become truer, more good, more beautiful, more free, more loving, more evolved in the process of manifesting it. So that's a milestones practice. And then the last, momentum, is actually, in a way, the most rich and complex. Those of you who have read the book I wrote with Ken Wilber and Marco Morelli and Adam Leonard, Integral Life Practice, remember the modules of Integral Life Practice. We talk about how practice involves all of life. It involves body, mind, spirit, shadow, soul, relationships, our citizenship in the world, our work, all these dimensions of life. And there's an integral cross-training that goes on. When we're breaking up the stuckness in our body through doing a really powerful physical practice, and we're also breaking up the stuckness in our mind by a kind of study that draws us into more rich and complex meaning-making, and we're also breaking up the stuckness of our attention by the way we're meditating, the breaking up of stuckness in one area of life liberates energy so that we can grow more rapidly in other areas of life. And this integral cross-training is the soul of every integral practice. And so in every day of practice, there are other things to do, whether it's going to a yoga class or a psychotherapy session or studying written teachings or listening to audios or having a deep conversation with someone who helps us know ourselves more fully, or doing some volunteer work, making a difference as a citizen in our community or the world. Those other practices are key too, and they're what help us maintain momentum. I always like to say, do at least one other thing every day, not just your morning's practice, not just your moment's practice, but something else. And some days you'll do many things, Those are the ways you maintain the momentum of practice. So that's what's in that 8-week course, and that's what I want to travel through with the folks who go through it with me again. And that maybe helps give you a little bit of an orientation to that. Now let me say just a few words about how I've organized these circles of mutuality. What they will be is a group of 8 to 12 people who will meet together intimately, just that 8 or 12 people together with one another, one time a month. And the other time a month, everybody who might be in any of the however many circles I have, maybe, you know, two or three of these circles, will be on the call together. We won't be just the small group, but we'll have a freewheeling conversation, a question and answer session in which I'll do live coaching with people individually, and we'll really just kind of get into the lived experience of practice in a more deeply empathic way. So every two or three weeks, there'll be a couple of hours of a call that'll be live interaction. And we'll do that each month for the 6 months, starting sometime here in July, as early in July as we're able to get the scheduling together and get the meeting times worked out. And then it'll go for 6 months into early January. So we'll make it through that that very all-important Christmas holiday break. And then part of what we will do is interact online with that smaller group of 8 to 12 people and share in a deep way. I have, I will create discussions. I'll ask key questions where we'll really consider practice and consider our lives in a deep way. And then I'll also assign you usually two other people, sometimes one other person, as a practice partner. And it's really critical, and it's been one of the richest parts of the work I've done in the past with people, for people to just really share intimately and be there's a value in receiving another and really taking in their experience and opening to be a friend and a servant of the highest and best in that other person on the one hand. And it's so valuable to be seen and heard and received on the other. And doing this in a small group of three or two people is with some guidelines from me. I have a handout I'll share and a variety of guidelines, because it's a real practice to do that well. That's a key dimension of the work that we do. And then there'll be some readings. There are a variety of other resources that I'll bring to bear. So that is the overall structure of what it is that I'm offering. And what this is also about, one of the things that I stress in the course is that that these forms of practice are only the foundation for the art of practice. That is, the there is no substitute for you showing up and waking up in the moment. That is, there's no formula. Like, the fact that you go and sit on the cushion doesn't mean that your consciousness awakens to its true nature. The fact that you go through the motions of some exercises doesn't mean that your embodied awake being finds its way to its ground and sky and heart and nature in a way that really restores you. We have to show up. We have to make the practice real. And this always requires us to travel an impossible journey. Because when you're disconnected, when you're feeling isolated, when you're feeling fundamentally unhappy or under threat or confused or alienated, there really is almost no way to get from that place to the place of connection and intuitive union and joy and freedom and gratitude and clarity. Except there is. It's like Achilles and the tortoise, you know, Zeno's paradox. Mathematically, Achilles would always have to cut the distance between him and the tortoise in half if he started behind the tortoise. And there are an infinite number of times that he would have to half the distance, and therefore he could never pass the tortoise. Except, of course, in real life, we know he runs right past it. Well, we have to be that aliveness, we have to be that showing up in which we defy the incredible power of separation. I often use a metaphor. In the early days of rocketry, they had to have many stage rockets because it took so much fuel to break the pull of Earth's gravity that you had to have some of the fuel in something that would drop off so the weight of it wouldn't still be aligned. You'd have maybe three different stages just to get up to get into orbit. Well, it takes a tremendous amount of energy to break the gravity of ego, of the habitual subject-object, object-subject consciousness. And that power to really realize freedom and to reinforce that is huge. And so a big piece of what I emphasize and what I bring forward in my teachings is a communication about and it's not just a communication about, it's a communication of the freedom and heart and awakeness of consciousness itself. And finding our way to performing that paradoxical act through which we go from separated consciousness into our natural condition of oneness and connection and freedom and joy and gratitude and clarity. And enacting that not just a few times, but many times, and beginning to learn that although it's an original act in every moment, and you really have to show up, and sometimes it's about gratitude, or sometimes it's about surrender, or sometimes it's about insight, and sometimes it's about fierceness, and sometimes it's about clarity. It's just so many different things. It's not a single formula. But the more you show up with a kind of good faith and good humor and willingness and beginner's mind, that, you know, the beginner knows that he or she doesn't know, and so has that flexibility and openness to discover the miracle and to enact it, that beginner's mind, that becomes practice. You get to be a better artist. And it doesn't mean that you know how to do it in the next moment. No, in the next moment, it will be a mystery too. And you'll have to show up in that next moment. And you'll have to discover what it is to cross from separated consciousness into intuitive union and awakeness. But you'll be stronger and stronger in your faith in yourself, in your capacity to do it. And you'll do it with more and more consistency and more times. That's how that gets built. Okay. Well, I think I've laid out something about the form and also the kind of the principles that I'm intending to communicate about all of this. I want to create an opening here for some of you to ask questions if you would like to. So if you have any thoughts or, you know, in fact, I encourage you to go ahead and raise your hand. You know, this is a there's not a million of us. We have less than 60 people on the line. So please go ahead and raise your hand and offer whatever question or whatever comment. You know, help me to speak directly to whatever you're feeling into or asking about at this time. And as many of us as there are, nobody has pressed a 1 on their keypad yet. Okay, here, somebody has. I don't have a way to identify you, so now that several of you have pressed 1, I guess I just have to call on you, and then all of you will answer, and only one of you will be heard. It's the only way we can do this. So you're on. Hello. Hi.
Hi there. It's Felicia Marils. I'm in Vancouver, Canada.
Hi, Felicia.
Hi. I have really, really enjoyed your conversation today, and I want to say right up front that I cannot afford to take your course, but I'm right on track with all the things that you're talking about. And I wanted to bring up something because I've been actively involved in spirituality since I was in my teens and raised by a mother who was intuitive. So it is in my consciousness so strongly that I'm having more fun with it now than I ever have, but I'm also feeling more lonely than I ever have. And what I'm realizing is that there feels to me like there is no way out from looking at a more compassionate way, a more loving way, a more inclusive way. And so when I'm pointing these things out, people are feel shocked to me, or they feel less than they should. For instance, there was a woman who asked for our opinion about why others were saying that she was mean in her delivery of a course, and so I watched what she had to give us to show a sample. And what I'm realizing is the evolution of those persons who we regarded as leaders is kind of stuck in a place as well. And there's a brutality in that that makes me raw when I watch it. And even though it's intended for a higher good, it has really old paradigm stuff in it. And I don't know how to say it in a way that is really constructive, but it is where leaders are, they must change really quickly.
Yeah, yeah. The new leading is a leadership followership in which we really become community with one another, and we're not practiced at it. In fact, this thing that you mentioned, I'd like to comment on about feeling more lonely as you grow. This is a point that Ken Wilber has talked about at some length, that as he puts it, it's lonely at the top. That is, as you evolve, there are fewer people around you who understand the way you're making meaning and can see and grasp the and empathize with and therefore fully receive you and your experience. So you have to hold your experience by yourself more as you grow.
Okay.
And we are evolving to a place where we need a different way of relating to one another. And it's tricky because, you know, like even in this call, now a bunch of people's hands are up. I can talk only so long to each person. There's a richness in this conversation I could go into in more depth if I were, you know, I have an impulse to honor the question by really expanding on it, but I have an impulse to honor others, and I'm in the role here of holding it. So then I, you know, in that sense, I pull a kind of rank by determining how much time I spend with this question and with others. And to do that in a way that has heart and that cares about the compromises, that just isn't calloused over with a kind of fundamental cutoff, you know, this I can do. And I hope that it makes you feel less alone to just have had this conversation, and that it gives you more strength to bring a kind of curiosity and a faith and a humor to the process of continuing to grow and learn how to communicate to another person. If you see that limit, the point isn't necessarily to tell somebody something. It might just be to deepen into contact with what it is that's possible in that moment and what can be said. And it may be that although there are many criticisms that are true, the thing to say is something more supportive. And open to and trust your own deeper knowing so that you never feel stuck, so that the stuckness is always a goad to a new opening.
And yeah. I do agree with you in that challenge. If you do take that leadership about polishing up your compassion every day, oh my God. I mean, it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's always a better way of stepping into it.
Absolutely. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. There's another person. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm Linda Hamilton.
Hi, Linnea.
I'm glad to know that you can hear me this way because I have earphones in my ear and I've never actually done this like this before. So I do want to say thank you very much for what a wonderful moment that we've spent together, or series of moments here. I'm in a position right now in my life where I lead approximately 60 people a week in looking at expanding their awareness, just to put it smallly. And most of these people are at some form involved with some form of an addiction or a difficulty in their life causing them financial problems or those types of things. So to continually keep myself moving forward and awake and aware when I walk into that room every day, the only way I know how, Terry, is to step into the present moment as fully as I can, releasing anything, being open to everything. And consequently, somehow I've, in a moment of what you're calling being goaded to go into a, to continue on, I think that's something how you said it, I have been just recently given chunks of, the only thing I can call it is freedom, or maybe even a prior reality that I wasn't even aware of. And I'm wanting to find out how I can help others, these people in particular that I'm doing this, this is my life's calling, on a daily basis other than today, to help them experience or receive these, and the only way I can say it is chunks of freedom that are so delightful and tasty and delicious that, and yet surprising and wondrous. And I want to teach it, but I feel a little limited because I'm just in the learning of it myself.
Well, one thing that is really understandable that you can offer to people is the metaphor that life is a school, that life delivers us lessons, and we tend not to learn them, so we get them again. And we're going to keep getting the same lesson in new forms until we really learn it. And when we get hip to that, when we really begin to recognize that those lessons are coming, we realize the incredible power of orienting ourselves to life with a growth mindset rather than a static mindset. So that when we get feedback from life that we've made a mistake of some kind, or we've hurt somebody's feelings, or we've, you know, we somehow get feedback that indicates something could be better. Instead of responding in a fundamentally defensive way where we kind of fundamentally say, well, that's how I am, and it's not so bad, and there are reasons for it, and all the justifications, we orient in a way that says, oh, well, there's an opportunity for me to grow. I guess there was a moment back there where there was a little bit of a fork in the road, and my attention went kind of unconsciously in this direction, and I could have noticed a choice to do something different. I'll try to feel into how I can notice that opportunity. And if people begin to get the difference between a growth mindset that takes every bit of life experience as an opportunity to grow and treats themselves as that project under construction, that's going to be the way that they make themselves accident prone for those happy accidents of those chunks of freedom to arrive. And I think if you really teach them something about life as a school and about this growth mindset, that orientation, the degree that you can help them take that on, is one of the biggest gifts you can give people.
Okay. I agree. I think that will be very, very helpful. Since I am placed in this position to do this, I want to do it with as great a passion as I can sum up at the moment.
Well, that is something that you then need to treat as not just a thing to get right, but a thing to grow in forever. And part of what you then need is good company, and you need people who can see deeply into you and love you and still see opportunities for you to grow. And the more you can place yourself in environments where you're loved and deeply seen and supported, but also challenged by the awakeness of the other people, the more you'll keep unfolding to your highest potentials.
I understand that. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, sure.
And
thank
I
you.
I think that that's absolutely a great need in my present experience. I don't feel lonely at all. That I don't feel at all. I feel tremendously grateful for just the fact that I'm sitting here, just the fact that I can.
I do too.
Talk to you. There isn't anything more than this moment as it is full enough and rich enough to sustain me. I mean, I don't have to do it. And yet I know what you're saying is absolutely true and gospel. That it is gospel. I do need to associate and connect with those who can help push me to a closer to the edge of my learning and growth. Those indeed who do love and care for me, because the majority of people that I am around are those who are in the learning process,
you have to build some free attention and free heart in order to be able to do that, for sure.
Absolutely. And I love the idea of free attention and free heart. And not only the idea, but the expression of free attention and the expression of free heart, that be able to be that in the present moment. I don't know what more is.
Yeah. Well, thank you for your call. There are several other hands up, so I'm going to move on.
Yes, we
don't
please,
have too much more time here. Thank you. In fact, I probably won't be able to get to all the raised hands. I'm sorry, but let me take another one. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. You're on the air.
Oh, hi, Terry. This is Mary Kyman from Omaha, Nebraska, USA.
Welcome, Mary.
Thank you. I'll try to make this as succinct as possible. Many years ago, in the spring of 1972, I experienced an incredible mystical awakening at the Art Institute of Chicago. I had gone into Chicago to see a Renoir exhibit, and it was the last Sunday it was open. And ultimately, that threw me into a nervous breakdown, the first of several. So as a result of that experience, it totally changed my life insofar as knowing that there's definitely a higher consciousness and constituted of loving energy, loving presence, and so on. What my concern is, my whole life has been devoted to learning and growing, and I'm a philosopher and humanist by profession. I'm a retired educator and professor. And I've done enormous reading in all of the world's traditions, trying to more deeply understand what I experienced that spring in Chicago. But so I've really been basically a seeker most of my life. Although I feel most drawn to Buddhism, particularly the type of practice by the Dalai Lama and Thich Nhat Hanh. But I'm at a point in life where I really want to go more deeply into meditation, but I'm afraid if I go too far that I'm going to have another nervous breakdown. And I'm 72, almost 73 years old, and yet I really feel I still have a purpose or a mission in life. But I think my true purpose is continuing to evolve my consciousness and evolve as a human being. And I've been following in recent weeks or months your work online and and the different presentations you've offered. But I'm presently enrolled for the Feminine Power course by some of your colleagues, but I'm feeling that more drawn to the path that you're offering because of its heavy philosophical foundation. And I'm just wondering, my question is, am I going to lose it? If I lose it, I mean lose my sanity if I pursue this deeper path that I'm drawn to. Are you still there?
Yes, yes, yes. I'm, you know, what I would say to you is that your personal choices about what courses you take and what you pay attention to are just yours to make. I only really want to focus on what it is that I'm offering and, you know, give you an opportunity to see that for what it is and to move toward it if it's really right for you. The hunger that you have for real spiritual awakening is dear to my heart. That is what I've, you know, just to say a little something about it, I grew up outside Chicago, and in fact, I attended the Renoir exhibition in 1972.
Did you really? Oh, wasn't it magnificent?
It was magnificent. And my original propulsion was political activism. I was interested I could see the injustices and so forth. I was raised in an interracial community and by people who had a big social commitment. And so I wanted to make the world a different and better place. But very soon after, around that time, around 1972, when I was going to the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor, I began to realize that the revolution had to begin with me and that there was no way that I could help create a more harmonious world out of the confused and divided consciousness that I possessed, and that I had to find a teacher and I had to find a path that would actually radically transform my consciousness, and that was not a little thing. Mm-hmm. And it's been because I have been able to give my whole life over to that transformational fire that I can offer clarifying wisdom and transmission that can help somebody like you actually awaken. And I'm interested to do that. I'm interested to do that, though, in a way that lands you not just in that radical freedom on the meditation cushion, but in a way that brings that freedom into life and into relationships. And that's why the intimate setting of these circles of mutuality is so important. Mm-hmm. So I think that this does offer something that would be valuable to you, and I respect that, you know, you may not feel that you are in a moment in your life when it can work, but I urge you to give it serious consideration. And I'm sorry, I would like to talk with you more, but I want to take one more question, and we do have to finish up. I have some things to say at the end, too, that are pretty important. So, blessings to you. Yeah.
And to you.
Okay. Hello. I have just I've mic'd someone else here. Please speak up.
Hello?
Hello.
Hey, Terry, is it me? Are you listening to me here?
Yes, it is. It's you.
Oh, hey, great. Andy Acker, how you doing?
Hi, Andy.
Hey. Great to hear your voice again, and definitely pulled to what you're doing because I'm in a place right now where I've had a lot of community in the past, you know, of course, living in Colorado on the West Coast. And right now I'm really feel starved and hungry in a good way, in a way that I didn't in the previous places I've lived and communities I've been in, for more connection and contact. And what really touched me from what you're talking about is kind of the loneliness that somebody brought up earlier, but also you really have to hold your experience and practice more as you go. And that's been a huge edge for me recently. And just the levels that you touch with this in a different kind of practices you bring in, especially with the moments and the continuity of practice with momentum. And I'm definitely facing some big life challenges right now and also choices in my life. So it seems where I really want to be primed to be the proper instrument to really walk through life. I just wanted to bring all that to the table here and just kind of wonder, I'm wondering how that we might meet some of that through the course.
Well, the course, the course delivers the principles in a really rich way. The thing about it is a truly integral approach to life and practice is always about running into the fact that life is paradoxical, and that as awake as we are, we're usually noticing some choice point and we're making the good choice, but we're tending to mistake that choice for the total picture, and there's always something else embedded that we're tending to step over and miss, and so we're tending to not be truly integral, and then we're getting bit in the butt by the what we've left out, by what we haven't been able to include. And it's not an intellectual matter, it's an embodied matter, it's a feeling matter, it's a living matter. So the course takes you through a tour in which you it's kind of like a gymnastics exercise in which you discover the full flexibility of your being by going into all these very, very rich distinctions and savoring how they inform your life. But then you're also actually engaging intimately with other people who are also doing this and who are caring about their own engagement with it. And it's the process, in a way, of growing up together. You become like awakeners in a mastermind cell of humanity awakening itself, you know, in a truly integral way. And so the course is the kind of foundation for it, but then the living engagement with other people and with me, bringing, you know, these kinds of things alive and actually meeting, you know, heart to heart, kind of making the kind of virtual eye contact that you and I are making by you actually speaking from the heart and me knowing that sincerity of that, trying to get down and speak directly to you. It's that kind of real contactful thing that really takes us out of all this being abstractions and takes us out of our isolation into a discovery of, oh, wait a second, this is my life right now. This is the opportunity for consciousness to awaken right now. I am not alone in this. There is a monitor of when, you know, all these little choices. It matters what I do. And it kind of calls us to what's best, and that's really why it's so effective and how it works. Yeah. Does that resonate? Does that respond to what you meant to ask about?
Yes, yeah. And I think underneath it, definitely, thank you, Terry, underneath it is really, well, you're talking about this seductiveness of the subject-object kind of separation and the kind of normal, everyday, conventional consciousness that we all walk through. And that was really kind of at the core of it, too, of what,
yeah.
what I'm really seeking support with, because there's this phenomenal pressure to just be normal, fit in, and, you know, there's times where it's like it's important to be able to relate, even if like, you know, it may sound arrogant, if I feel that other people are more stuck in that than I am at times, and I feel more open, you know, there's a contrast, but then sometimes I also get pulled in and I get stuck as well, and it becomes a major problem.
Totally. Well, this is the thing, to find your, like, this is, the traditional teachings basically take the stance that people are ignorant, that you want to cultivate the company of the wise, that it's best to withdraw from normal society and just live in the monastery and not even try to straddle the complexity. and that there's a fundamental anathematization of relative experience. And there's a kind of conventional truth to it. You can feel enlightened a lot more of the time if you do it that traditional way. And that's, but, you know, kind of what the traditional lineage schools and realizers mostly do. That's the problem, though, with all these monastic systems. There can be incredible spiritual fragrance and sweetness in somebody who's just refining their consciousness in that one-pointed way, but it's not going to transform our world. It's not what's being called for by the world crisis. We're alive in a time of crisis. We have to find a way to awaken from and awaken into life at the same time. And that's so hard. I mean, it's like the curriculum of growth that's set before you that you're describing. We don't have a lot of models for people who've done this the way we need to, but we still have, you know, it's like you have no choice. You kind of have to do your best to do this. So it's with a sense of the grandness, you know, the bigness of this adventure, and also the tenderness of the, you know, the place from which your question is so sincere, and you feel so disappointed to see yourself going into a conventional frame of mind and losing track of the awake. You know, you've been awake to a certain degree, and then you've gone back asleep to some degree, and you hate to see that. And yet, there's no simple answer. It's all about ongoingly awakening in many, many moments, and it doesn't always look the same. And what it is to be really served and really helped and really strengthened in that. This is, you know, kind of what I've been focusing on and specializing in now for years since you first encountered me back in, what was it, 2006 or something, or 5?
Yeah, it was like 03 or something, yeah.
Yeah, maybe it was even earlier, yeah.
Yeah.
so 10 years. So yeah. This is what I'm you know, devoted to. It's what I'm going to be doing with the people that end up participating in these circles with me. So, you know, thanks for giving me a chance to express that. I think it's really helped the call. So good to hear your voice,
Malcolm. You too.
Yeah. All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. I think I'll take just one more. I know there are others of you with your hands in the air. I'm sorry, but we'll do what we can. So here I'm calling on one other person. Please speak up. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, that's you.
Me?
Yep. You're kind of faint. Speak as loud as you can.
Yeah, if you're talking to me, I'm Dexter in Eugene, Oregon.
Hi, Dexter.
Hey. I had kind of given up getting the question answered because you said you weren't going to take any more, so I was like, oh, well. And then it's like, oh, another one, so I was a little off balance there. But what arose for me was, as you were talking about these grand opportunities in life to, you know, to fulfill our higher purpose, and it sounds really good, and I believe it, but my reaction was, well, that doesn't apply to me. You know, there's a sense that, wow, Terry is living in this great place where he has freedom and opportunity to engage in these daily practices, the morning, the minute, the, you know, the extra thing, the reading, the study, the, you know, et cetera, going on workshops, et cetera. But it seems like most of us are so stuck and embedded in this matrix of, you know, family and work and life and money and health. You know, it's such an uneven distribution of resources that we all have, like we're dealt different hands. And I'm thinking, wow, you know, there's certainly some elite group of people who are going to be able to do this and benefit from this. But then there's like me and everybody else who's just going to have to, you know, suffer along as best we can in, you know, in ignorance and darkness and pain and suffering and isolation, because we're not in that blessed state or that lucky position, or we don't have those assets. And, you know, there's like a big economic cut here that, you know, can you afford this, you know, time and money-wise, or are you, you know, not good enough, or you just don't have, you know, you're not.
Well, I mean, my heart goes out to you. I know that feeling. I have felt that feeling, too. And it's not wrong, or I'm not trying to make you wrong around it. But when I have felt that, something in me has had to stand up to it, and I have had to refuse to believe it. and I encourage you to refuse to believe it. The fact that you yearn to be on the other side of that cut is, that's the real price of admission. You know, you might have to make some sacrifices. You might have to make some financial sacrifices to do something that really supports you, sure. But you're not without choices, you know. I know I was talking with a friend some years ago who couldn't get a job, but he was kind of a hippie, and he wouldn't cut his hair either. Well, you know, he could have gotten a job, you know. He just had his terms, and based on how he lived his life, he couldn't get a job in that particular moment. And there's some set of assumptions that we're always making that limit us, that we can't see. That's the nature of the growth of consciousness. There are patterns, there are assumptions, there are limiting beliefs, there are all kinds of things that are what's between us and our freedom. And so even though it really does feel like those things are objective and real, there is some way in which you can break through them. And that's something we always have to do ourselves. It's like there's no substitute for me showing up and saying, no, I'm not going to live inside this limit. So, you know, in this situation, I don't know exactly what the practicalities of your life are, but, you know, if your finances are really limited, maybe all you could do would be to just take my course, which is less than $300. It's probably not out of your reach. You wouldn't get the same level of personal guidance from me individually. Sure, that has a lot of value, but you could engage that course with tremendous seriousness and really take it to heart and really make it effective in your life and really use those resources and take it over as long a period of time as was necessary. You know, there are things you can do. I'm just wanting to turn this around on you just because that part of you that's willing to believe you're on the wrong side of the cut is the part of you that another part of you has to defy. Another part of you has to stand up to that and not believe that. And in fact, we have to do that again and again in life. There are ways in which something in us makes us believe that we're subject to some absolute limitation. And we have to not believe it. We have to recognize a deeper truth. And we have to act on the basis of that. Again and again and again. And it's that persistent and consistent, repeated choosing of the better thing again and again and again that is what really liberates us. And I encourage you to recognize that choosing is something that has to take place in some now. It isn't something that you kind of think about, and maybe I'll do later. At some point, you have to say, okay, I'm doing it right now. There is that moment in which you just step over the line. And one of the things that's really great about what I'm offering right now, what I'm inviting you to consider, these circles of mutuality, is that it's one choice that you can make in one discrete moment when you're at your best that will create a cascade of other changes in your life. And those are particularly powerful choices, choices that create many other choice points that set us into a pattern that is healthy, a virtuous circle, you know, like the opposite of a vicious cycle. It's a virtuous cycle. So I encourage you to frame it that way. And without making it wrong, that it tends to frame itself up the other way, because it does. And there's reality and real situations that cause you to think of it the other way, and they're not trivial. But still, don't let yourself live out the limitation it tends to dictate. Don't buy it.
Thank you.
Yeah, you can have a different experience, and I hope you do. Okay, well, I want to tell you a few things about about my course and what the practicalities are here. you know, this is really an invitation. If you want to go deeper in practice and really want to commit to it and take a stand for it, a few of us will be making this journey together. I can really only work with a limited number of people, so this is by application. If you seriously want to consider participating, go ahead and I will send out an email following this with the recording of this call, and there'll be a link in it that you can click to see a PDF that describes it, and then you can fill out the application. It does ask for a deposit, but that deposit is fully refundable if you're not accepted, or if there's not enough space, or if the scheduling doesn't work for you, or for any other reason you're not able to do it, you get it all back. And then probably my assistant, Rebecca, will get in touch with you, and you may end up with a phone conversation with her or with me as we kind of, you know, clarify, you know, you're getting into it. And we'll really engage in practice in a very rich way. As a community, we're doing this, and the purpose is actually to build a movement, a growing community of people with like minds, like hearts, like spirits. And this is where I dig in and do my best to build that community in the most personal terms, which is, you know, heart by heart, one heart at a time. Now, you know, you may have spent as much as $2,000 or $3,000 or more for the tuition and the air tickets and the hotel and the time lost from work that are associated with going to an in-person seminar, which are wonderful. I love them. But no matter how wonderful, you know, after that week or weekend or whatever, they're over. So no matter how deeply they engage us, sustained instruction over time, you know, practice that's really rooted in your lived experience over the arc of time. Because when we make a commitment like this, we get a surge, and we have a little honeymoon. But then we go through a slump at another point. And maintaining that contact through those cycles and really building it in intimate connection, this helps you build the muscles that can help you go through those cycles later in your life. So, I really feel that there's a tremendous value in this program. We've actually priced it really cheaply. This, compared to what I've done in the past, this is a very, I'm doing it as inexpensively as I can. And for anybody who registers by Thursday, that we have an early registration pricing, which is a pretty substantial discount off the registration price. That's good until the end of the day on Thursday, the 27th. So there's like 4 or 5 days before that. And there are some questions that I've gotten by email that I want to say is that I've identified a whole series of possible times. So I will, once we know who's accepted and we have, you know, we'll actually get a sense of people's timing even probably before acceptance, so we can kind of see what times are likely. Then we'll select a time that works for as many people as possible. And, of course, you know, refund the deposit for those who can't make it. And so they will take place at a mutually convenient time. There are people who are participating in these circles with me from as far away as Japan and Australia and New Zealand and United Kingdom, Norway, and, you know, it is necessary to be creative about scheduling so that we can find times that work for everyone. Now, some people have asked me about the time involved. So this will tend to require something like 2 to 5 hours a week. Depends on how much time you want to put into it, in addition to your regular morning practice time. So that accounts for doing readings and attending the circle gatherings and meeting up with your practice partners and listening again to the course sessions and participating in the online forum. The course sessions will begin sometime in early July. If you need to miss some sessions, you know, we do create recordings that you have access to later, but do try to be present for all of them, but we do make allowance because life happens and it's hard for everybody to be perfect. But you don't get to be heard from if you miss the session, but you will hear the session, so you won't be totally blanked out. And the purpose of the practice partnerships people have asked about, well, it's about developing real intimacy with another practitioner who's fundamentally made the same choices you have to relate to the choice points in your life with real seriousness. And that deeply mutually supportive relationships with other practitioners is just what this is about creating. So you'll have one, two, or three practice partners, usually two, sometimes one, maybe four if you all kind of feel that works for you. So I want to invite you to step up and you know, commit to the deepest call within yourself. If you want the highest potential of the course and it's your soul's call to work with me for these next 6 months, you know, if there's a voice in you that's telling you yes, you know, please join us. This is not for dabblers or people who just want to talk a good game or want to be holier than thou or bypass life and spirituality. It's not lone wolf spirituality. It's not a know-it-all thing. If you're one of the people that I'm talking to here, I suspect you know it. So I invite you to go ahead and make a commitment. The world really does need practitioners now, and it needs us to create communities of practice. So there is a link in the PDF. In the email that announced this call, there was a link to a PDF. And in that PDF, there's a link to a registration link. And in a few hours, when we get the recording of this call processed, I'll send out another email, and we'll have the registration link in that email, too. So I invite you to apply and register, and if it works out, I look forward to be able to work with you over this time ahead. I'd like to close with a poem. This is a poem some of you have heard. It's one of my favorite poems. I've offered it before in public forums, but I think it's a wonderful way to be reminded of the spirit of practice. It's a poem by Jennifer Wellwood titled Unconditional. Willing to experience aloneness, I discover connection everywhere. Turning to face my fear, I meet the warrior who lives within. Opening to my loss, I gain the embrace of the universe. Surrendering into emptiness, I find fullness without end. Each condition I flee from pursues me. Each condition I welcome transforms me and becomes itself transformed into its radiant, jewel-like essence. I bow to the one who has made it so, who has crafted this master game. To play it is purest delight. To honor its form, true devotion. Thank you, everybody. It's been a pleasure to spend this time with you. May you be richly blessed.